I'm wondering if somebody can do a wellness check on my brother and his family. They've been really sick for probably like the past week and a half, and I can't seem to get a hold of them.
A couple of sheriffs went upstairs. That's when they notified that there were a couple of sevens, which the sheriff notified me was deceased bodies.
Police in Florida have not officially identified the four people found dead, but the possibility that it is a family from Colchester has a lot of people in that town shaken tonight.
The reports of the autopsy determined that the cause of death of the four decedents inside the home to be homicide.
It just didn't make sense. It still doesn't make sense. It's just hard to understand.
From The Day in New London, Connecticut, I'm Taylor Hartz.
And I'm Sten Spinella.
And this is Looking for the Tote Family. I've tried to imagine what it must have been like to be a patient of Tony Tote's. Dawn Barden brought her daughter Courtney to see Tony for a slew of medical conditions that cause her chronic pain and make her joints pop out of place almost every day.
She's been diagnosed with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome type 3. Amplified musculoskeletal chronic joint pain, POTS syndrome.
Courtney saw countless doctors and therapists who couldn't seem to help her. Dawn felt hopeless, like no one could ease her daughter's pain. Until they found Tony.
We had gotten recommended, of course. We didn't have any high hopes because we had already been to so many therapists already for her. And he was just like, I could fix this. I could help you with that. He's like, oh, that's easy. How would this feel? And she was just able to walk and be straight. He'd be able to tell which bones were out of place by looking at her.
Tony owned Family Physical Therapy in Colchester, Connecticut. And to Dawn and Courtney, he was the miracle they'd been looking for.
Nobody ever helped me as much as Tony.
Tony was popular in Colchester. He was a well-respected physical therapist, a kid's soccer coach, and had even been named a hero of the day by a group that celebrates kindness in town. Tony was married to his high school sweetheart, Megan, for almost 20 years. They had three kids, Alec, Tyler, and Zoe, a fluffy little dog named Breezy, and a big, beautiful home in a Disney-designed town outside of Orlando. Megan was so devoted to her family. She was a stay-at-home mom, she homeschooled the kids, and she cooked everything from scratch. She taught yoga and had her own successful career as a physical therapist. Her friends said that she was the human embodiment of sunshine. Tony treated a lot of kids at his physical therapy practice, and parents like Dawn praised him for being friendly and funny and flexible with his time.
She can go to bed normal and wake up where she can't move. So if that happened and she was in too much pain, I would just call the office and Tony would be like, hey, bring her down right now, I'll meet you there, or bring her in after school if she can tolerate to go to school. He was always there.
Until one day, he wasn't.
The office had called me on that Thursday before Thanksgiving and said that, hey, Tony had a medical emergency with his wife, which we've had a few times, you know, they've done that, and we usually reschedule at the other office and then go see another therapist.
Though Tony still worked in Connecticut, not far from where he and Megan grew up, Megan and the kids had moved down to Florida a few years before. They rented a home in a Mayberry-like town called Celebration, where every lawn was perfectly manicured, and every family, like the Totes, seemed to live a perfect life.
They had canceled. They said that he should be back next week. I'm like, okay. And then it was Thanksgiving week, and they didn't have any. They had canceled again.
Tony spent most weekends in Florida with his family, flying back to Connecticut during the week to go back to work. It wasn't unusual for him to have to cancel an appointment, but in November, he disappeared for days. Days turned into weeks, weeks turned into months, leaving his patients in pain without treatment as the cancellations piled up.
On the last call, when they called and told me that, hey, we're closing for Christmas and for New Year's in the entire 2 weeks, and I'm like, well, what the heck am I gonna do? She can't move. She's in pain. She's been laying in bed. She's like, well, maybe you should find another doctor for now.
Dawn called over and over, trying to reschedule her daughter's appointments, until eventually, the phone line was disconnected.
The number or code you have dialed is incorrect. Please check the number or code and try again.
Looking for answers about where her daughter's trusted physical therapist had gone, she tried looking Tony up online.
We were home. It was like 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, and I was just like, I saw the Facebook post that they're missing, you know, they're missing, and I'm like, wait, what?
I've been reporting on this story for the past year with my colleague Sten Spinella. We've been trying to piece together what happened to the Totes. How a story that started with a happy family from small town Connecticut turned into one of the most grisly crimes either of us has ever heard of. For us, the story started when Sten found the same Facebook group that Dawn did.
On Sunday afternoon, I was working my shift for the newspaper, and I got a Facebook message from this woman in Montville, which is one of the towns I cover. She's plugged into what's going on in town. She reaches out to me every 5 or 6 weeks with some news tip. This time it was about a missing family. The message she sent me contained a link to a Facebook group called Looking for the Tote Family. So I clicked on the link and I saw relatives that had been searching for Tony Tote and his family for some time. Going through the Facebook posts like I was doing for what I thought was going to be, I guess, a missing family story, a couple hours before it became much bigger than that, there were people posting in the group asking, "Do you want us to drive by the house in Colchester?" The family had to be like, "Actually, the Totes are in Florida. They sold the home in Colchester." What the Facebook group did that was interesting, and I have a feeling that the sisters would hate this idea, is basically create an audience for this story before it even happened.
Well, I was sitting on the couch scrolling through Facebook.
I was just flipping through Facebook and I saw Megan's picture.
On Facebook, so I knew that people were looking for the family.
All of a sudden I saw searching for the Tote family. And I'm like, the Tote, like, what is this?
And I happened to see the post from Tony's sisters asking for help and that they hadn't heard from him.
From the very start, from day one, we knew about the Tote family because of the Facebook group. And later, that group helped us meet people in Colchester who actually knew the Totes.
But no matter how helpful these Facebook groups were to our reporting, we knew we weren't getting a full picture of what happened. We were getting speculation, only part of the story.
We needed to get on the ground and knock on doors to start looking for answers.
We reached out, we set up interviews, and that's where the story ended up coming from in full.
Social media doesn't always show the whole picture.
What we post on social media is what we want the world to see, what we want people to think of us, and not necessarily reality.
But it is a really good place to find out what people are talking about in your community. And in January, in this part of Connecticut, everybody was talking about the Totes.
Yeah, it was like early January. I know that search went out.
Linda Ackerman was one of the first people I spoke with when I started reporting on the Tote case. And she was the first person I spoke with who actually knew Tony. And I found her through Facebook.
I've known Tony for probably about 5 or 6 years. He was not only my physical therapist, but as well as a physical therapist to my entire family, including my two boys and my husband.
Linda is very plugged in to the Colchester community. She runs the All Things Colchester Facebook group, a kind of online community forum. As this case unfolded, this group was flooded with talk of the Totes.
And my first reaction, and for the longest time, I was really convinced that maybe he just, you know, said to his family, let's just go off the grid. So I kind of figured maybe they were camping somewhere off the grid. They went on a cruise. They went somewhere and just someplace where they didn't want anybody to be able to contact them. You hear about it all the time, and I know, you know, families think, oh, no, I know they would tell us that they were going away. But if they really wanted to get away, those are the people you're not going to tell.
We also spoke with some of the Totes' neighbors in Florida. They hadn't seen the Totes for a while, but they didn't think there was any reason to worry.
There wasn't a reason to think that anything, you know, was kind of a during a vacation time.
Scott Ward is a Celebration resident who knows a lot about the town.
This might be a second, third home for certain people.
And knows basically everybody in it.
There was no real reason to think, I wonder what's going on in that house over there. It was, you know, quiet. It's a pretty quiet neighborhood anyway. And so a lot of people were in the assumption that knew them, thought that they were out of town on vacation.
Because it was Christmas time.
Sue Reed lives around the corner from the Tote family home.
So lots of people go away, and lots of these houses are second homes. So you don't really know who's around or who's not, you know, all the time, except the people that you really know.
Christina Garrity and her family live just behind the Tote's house in Celebration.
We had heard that they'd gone away. We all kind of assumed they'd gone away and up north for the holidays. And then when the Facebook post came out, we all got concerned, of course, and the neighborhood started stirring.
Every year since they moved to Florida, the Totes came back up to Connecticut for the holidays. They often stayed with Megan's aunt and uncle, Cindy Kopko and Stuart Peel. Megan had been estranged from her mom for years, and her dad had died in 2002. Her aunt and uncle were her closest family.
Megan was kind of all by herself. You know, her father passed away, and her mother is not in contact with the family. So she had her grandparents, Max and Gladys, and then she had us, and that was it.
Cindy and Stuart had visited the family in Florida several times, taking the kids to theme parks and beaches.
I took them to Busch Gardens, Sesame Land, and everywhere.
Sledding in the winter.
Sledding in the winter.
Me and the kids.
Yeah, we took them to the miniature golf, and then the year before.
We did all miniature golf. We went to Volcano Bay. We went to the beach. The beach, we took them on vacation on the West Coast, on the East Coast.
Megan had been the flower girl in Cindy and Stuart's wedding, and they'd only grown closer over the years. They adored her kids.
We bought them kites and we taught them how to.
You did.
Yeah, we taught them how to fly kites.
I don't know how to do it. Yeah. You put them all together, help the kids put them all together.
And they got the hang of it. Tyler got the hang of it.
In 2019, Cindy and Stuart didn't get their usual Thanksgiving visit from their niece and her family. The Totes stayed in Florida for Thanksgiving and then again for Christmas, which Cindy and Stuart said wasn't normal for them. Cindy and Stuart reached out to their niece multiple times around Christmas, checking in to say happy holidays and make sure the kids got their gifts. At first, things didn't seem too concerning. They got some text messages from Megan mentioning that they were going out of town on a trip to St. Augustine so the boys could see the city's architecture and get a hands-on history lesson. When Cindy and Stuart got texts from Megan in December saying that they were headed to St. Augustine and may not be on their phones much, they didn't think anything of it. But shortly before the trip, they started getting texts from Megan that said they were sick. She told them they all had the flu and were too sick to talk on the phone. They were putting off their trip until they felt better. Then they got a text from Tony that said Megan had lost her phone. He said they were all going off the grid for a little while. After that, all communication came from Tony. That's when they started to worry.
We got past Christmas, and then there was the story that they had, you know, gone away and they're off the grid, turned our phones off, and then they were sick. And Cindy was getting concerned, and she kept texting, and, you know, tell me how it's going, and where are you, and blah, blah, blah. And she was getting texts back, but she doesn't think that it was from the people she was texting.
Cindy and Stuart strongly suspect that Tony was sending them messages from other people's phones. There were all these excuses coming from Tony, allegedly, that, you know, the kids were sick, Megan was sick, they couldn't come to the phone, and then at a certain point, they stopped answering altogether. So Chrissy, Tony's sister, called the Osceola County Sheriff's Office on December 29th.
I'm wondering if somebody can do a wellness check on my brother and his family. They've been really sick for probably like the past week and a half, and I can't seem to get a hold of them.
Okay, give me just a moment.
In her 911 call, Chrissy mentioned that no one in her family had heard from her brother or his wife or their kids.
When was the last time you heard from them, ma'am?
The last time I physically talked to him was on, either Monday or Tuesday, and he was texting my sisters and I up until Thursday. Was supposed to call us between yesterday and today, and we haven't been able to get a hold of him. I can't get a hold of him, my sister-in-law, or even my nephew.
Police went to the Totes' house to check on the family, but it seemed like they weren't home.
They went to the house, knocked on the door, walked around it, and didn't notice anything suspicious.
The blinds were drawn, the door was shut, and it was dark inside. They weren't able to determine that somebody was home, that they were out of town, or whether something bad had happened to them.
We get a call to do a well-being check, and in this case it was for a family possibly having the flu, being down and out for a couple of days. It's not uncommon this time of the year. People are encouraged to get their flu shots. And so
at a press conference, Osceola County Sheriff Russ Gibson described how deputies conducted welfare checks on the tote home.
They would go there, knock on the door. If there wasn't an answer, they might walk around the home to look inside the home if there's any blinds open to see if they can see anything inside. They did so in this case. They checked that. The blinds were closed. There was nothing suspicious noted. They checked with some neighbors. They didn't get anything suspicious from them. This family was known to travel. So it wasn't uncommon to think or even have a thought in your mind that they could have picked up and went to Clearwater or to Cocoa Beach for the day or for a week. This is a person who Anthony Tope had his practice that he did physical therapy, I believe, in Connecticut. He worked when he was working up there Monday through Friday, and he would come here on the weekends to be with his family, who had been living down here for the past couple years, give or take. So it's not uncommon for these folks to be known to pick up and go someplace. So it didn't rise to a level of suspicion.
January 10th, Chrissy called again.
Hi, I don't know who I need to speak with. I'm curious if I can have a wellness check done.
A little more desperate this time. You know, still didn't know where the family was.
I had actually called on December 29th, and I had an officer go out because I was concerned. My brother and his family, they had all been sick. But there's actually been more development.
And in this call, she mentioned something that, you know, set Facebook groups ablaze when they heard this.
Just in conversations with my sister, you know, my sister-in-law was making a comment about, and we just kind of put it all together, about basically the world ending on the 28th, and nobody has talked to them. Nobody physically talked to my sister-in-law since the 26th of December, and my brother has stopped texting as of Monday.
Basically, Chrissy told police that the last time she actually heard her sister-in-law's voice, she said the world was ending.
So they think the world is ending and you're worried they're going to, like...
She didn't really know what it meant, it sounded like, but it sounded like she was just trying to give details so the police help them in any way.
He flew back to Florida on the 22nd of November. We didn't find out about all this until the week of Christmas, and we've had a very, very hard time getting anything from him, and he has stopped all communications. And we have not spoken to Megan. Nobody has heard from Megan.
Obviously, we would have liked to have interviewed Chrissy and other members of the family, but ultimately it seems that they've decided not to participate, which I completely understand and empathize with. And, you know, even though it's our job to knock on doors and try to have uncomfortable conversations with people, it makes perfect sense when they don't want to have those conversations, and that's their right. I do hope at some point that we have the opportunity to speak with Chrissy about all this. I believe her viewpoint is absolutely essential to the story we're trying to tell. But at this point, you're only going to hear Chrissy's voice in recordings from police.
So I don't know if there's a way that somebody can go out. They are renting a place. They're actually being evicted from that property.
Yasmin Dordoy, the Tote's landlord in Celebration, also called the police.
I own the property that I rent out, and I have concerns for the family.
They hadn't paid their rent, which was about $5,000 a month.
I have on social media, I've just sort of seen that people have not seen or heard of from this family in a long, long time, and I've been trying to serve notice to evict them because they've not been paying rent.
I mean, the landlord called for the same reason that Chrissy was calling, trying to see if the police knew what was going on with the family. She hadn't been paid, which was another problem. But, you know, while she mentioned that in the call, she seemed mostly to be worried about their welfare.
Now, my concern is, from everything I read on social media and stuff, the kids have not been seen since Thanksgiving.
She had left a note on the door notifying the family of an upcoming eviction, and the note had never been touched. Almost as if no one had gone in or out of the house for quite a while.
We can't show ourselves up because we're going to be clear. How can I help you?
How do you? My name is Officer Michael Brown from the Colchester, Connecticut Police Department. I was looking if you could do a well-being check.
2 days later, on January 13th, the sheriff's office received a call from Connecticut State Police.
The issue is that we have a family that bounces back and forth between Connecticut and Florida. Their neighbor is concerned about them in Florida, so they reported them as missing.
At that point, police in Florida had already found the Tote family.
Okay. I'm going to have, actually, the homicide detective give you a call. I don't know if you're following the news or not, if it's gotten that far. We had a murder-suicide in that area, so I'm not going to be able to release any other information, but the homicide detective will contact you and get you some information. But if you could not release that information to the people asking for this, that would be great.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
At the same time, the news started filtering back to people in Connecticut, including Megan's aunt and uncle.
And then I was at work on the 13th, and Cindy called me in tears. And said, something's bad has happened in Florida. So I put it up on the, you know, tried to find something on the news, and all I could find was the crime scene. But at that time, it was just a death investigation. And then as the day wore on, we got more information. And then she called me back probably around 11 o'clock, and she was screaming. And she says, they're all dead.
Next time on Looking for the Tote Family.
Hey, how's it going? My name's Casey Hatcher. I'm with FBI out of the New Haven Division.
We were informed that there are some family members inside of a home at 202, deceased.
The master bedroom door was open, and you could see feet.
Tony, what about the dog? What about the reason?
Myself, I cannot understand what would cause a person to commit such evil and horrendous acts.
If you haven't already, please subscribe to Looking for the Tote Family on your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to rate the show. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Looking for the Tote Family is hosted and reported by Taylor Hartz and Sten Spinella. Produced by Peter Huapi and Carlos Virgen. Written by Taylor Hartz, Sten Spinella, and Peter Huapi. Editing by Peter Huapi and music by Carlos Virgen. Tim Cotter is our executive editor. And Izaskun Larnieta is our managing editor. Social media management by interns Josette Moses and Allison O'Donnell. This has been a production of The Day in New London, Connecticut.